Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig Garber. You know me as host of the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, but when I'm not interviewing world-class guitar players, I'm busy helping clients with their marketing. In fact, since March of 2000, I've helped over 300 clients in 108 different industries all over the world sell everything from $20 books to $5,000 seminar seats and everything in between. I even authored a book about my experience called How to Make Maximum Money with Minimum Customers. Now, if you own or operate a business, ask yourself the following marketing-related questions and be honest with your answers. Are you generating fresh new qualified leads on a daily basis? Is your website generating enough sales? And if not, do you know why? Is your advertising effective? Is it predictably and reliably making you several multiples of what you're spending on it? And lastly, are you consistently communicating with your email list? Or do you have an email list of prospects and customers, but you have no idea what to say to them, how often to say it, or how to make money with this list? If you need solutions for these marketing problems, then you need to book a one-on-one marketing strategy session with me. After this strategy session, you'll know how to speak to and make money with your email list, how to use your website to attract customers and clients who are ready to buy from you now, and how to sell your goods and services for top dollar and at much higher profit margins than your competition. Listen, stop hoping things will get better on their own. Hope is not a very good business strategy. Instead, book a marketing strategy session with me by going to everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing and find out if your business meets the five criteria you need to qualify for this service. Again, that's everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing. Thanks for listening. Now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and I've got a real badass gunslinger with us today. She's equally adept at playing funk, rock, and blues. In fact, if you want to see some really great blues, look up Kat Dyson on YouTube at the She Rocks program, and it was phenomenal. Anyway, we're here with Kat Dyson. Southern-born guitarist, singer-songwriter Kat Dyson has made her way, residing between Montreal, Minneapolis, New York City, and Los Angeles on a roller coaster musical journey that started with her studying classical voice and jazz guitar studies at Norfolk State University. Since joining the performance world out of college, she's played alongside such renowned artists as Cyndi Lauper, Prince, Sheila E., Natalie Cole, Ivan Neville, Donny Osmond, rap artist T.I., Seal. Is this just Joy? I'm going to mess that up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars, Musique Soulchild, Phoebe Snow, Rez, The Winans, Mary Mary, Yolanda Adams, Big Mama Thornton, Benny King, Bo Diddley, Odetta, Mick Jagger, Sarah McLachlan, Buddy Guy, B.B. King, Chaka Khan, Carlos Santana, Sting, Stevie Wonder, Sam Moore from Sam and Dave, obviously, Bruce Willis, Nona Hendrix, the B-52s, and many others. Wow, there's enough names in there. That's like a 3 years worth of Rolling Stone magazine. Her studio work highlights her with such artists as Prince, Keb Moe, Ziggy Marley, Sheila E., Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics, Mick Jagger on the Alfie soundtrack, Jeff Healey, Cy Smith, Donny Osmond, Jamaican producers Sly and Robbie, Cat Coor of Third World and Bernie Worrell of P-Funk, Keb Moe and Zucchero. Before joining forces with Prince, Miss Dyson was a contributing guitarist and vocalist on the multi-platinum Cyndi Lauper Greatest Hits album called 12 Deadly Sins, along with At Last and The Body Acoustic. Selected TV show credits include The Magic Hour with Magic Johnson and bandleader Sheila E., Kat was a house band guitarist and vocalist there. The Donnie and Marie Show, again, Kat was the house band guitarist and vocalist. And the Wayne Brady Show, same thing, house band, guitarist, vocalist. Along with various U.S. tours from 2007 to the present day, she's also been touring with Italian rock and blues legend Zucchero worldwide. And you ought to check him out if you don't know him. He's pretty intense. She's a member of the Rock Trio Challenge with T.M. Stevens and Cindy Blackman Santana, and L.A.-based all-girl ensembles Co-Ed, Hit Like a Girl, and Jazz in Pink, as well as collaborations with bass sensation Divinity Rocks. She continues to be the go-to guitarist for many touring Black Rocks. That's right, BRC, right?
Yeah.
Black Rocks. Is that
Black Rock Coalition.
Thank you. Black Rock Coalition events with Tamar Kali and Toshi Reagan. In addition to releasing her EP, Color Commentary, she's composing music for TV, documentaries, and film in Los Angeles. In the May 2017 edition of Guitar Player, she made the 50 Sensational Female Guitarist list, and she's also included in the compilation She Rocks Volume 1 on Favorite Nation's Record, which is Steve Vai's label. Kat, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And great to be here.
And she's back well-rested from a vacation.
Yes.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Hey, let's start at the beginning, Kat. You said that your musical journey began with you studying classical voice and jazz guitar at Norfolk State. I was curious
It started before that. I started as a kid, you know, in the South, and every little Southern girl must take piano lessons because that's what mother says you must do. I sang in choirs. I was one of those interesting Southerners who happened to be in the Bible Belt, but our family was Catholic. So the first thing I ever sang was Ave Maria. So I the first hymns I learned and the first things I sang in were in Latin. My mom bought my first guitar when I was a kid because I just kept saying, Mom, piano is boring. The boys are outside playing guitar. Come on, Mom. And she did. So that's kind of, you know, you play around in town and you get a little band started and you play the high school dances in the clubs and stuff. So it kind of started unofficially before college. College was just putting terms to the things that I'd learned and trying to get out of bad habits.
and where is this? In Virginia? Is that where you grew up?
In Virginia, yes.
Yeah. Okay. What made you study classical voice and jazz guitar?
Well, initially, I was due to go to Norfolk State for their med tech program. I wasn't really going to go there for music. And they didn't have the program. The curriculum wasn't quite together. And my scholarship was based on my grades because I did quite well in science and math. And like I said, I sang before I played. So I was always singing in choirs. I was the assistant student conductor for my high school choir. So I was always interested in classical music and always in competitive choirs. So once I found out that they didn't have that curriculum, they offered a music education degree and I auditioned for classical voice. They also had a program called Music and Media, which included Consuela Moorhead, who is Spike Lee's aunt, jazz pianist phenomena, Bill Lee's sister. And there was a jazz guitar studies component to it. And my teacher was John Shacklett, a famous jazz guitar player who was Wes Montgomery's protege and took over Wes's trio when Wes passed away.
Oh, wow.
He played left hand reverse. So when he would play, I'd have to kind of like turn my head and, wow. You know, he just played crazy stuff that a right-handed guitar player can't even play, but of course I try to go home and play it. So I was actually doing two degrees at once. I was a little bit ambitious, yeah.
So studying with a guy like John must have been phenomenal.
It was so far over my head that I'm still remembering now some of the things that he told me because they're finally making sense. But he was very patient and very kind and saw the skill set and the things that I, like I said, taught myself and learned on the streets from playing with guys and, you know, playing as kids, you get the books and you learn these Beatles songs in 5 easy lessons, you know what I mean? And then I just sat in front of the radio and taught myself through having chord books, you know, top 40, because that's what we did, you know, for the talent shows. You learned the top 40 tunes and, you know, you earned a little money playing in the top 40 bands. And a guitar player, a local guitar player in Chesapeake, Virginia, where I grew up, Jay Moore, he was better at it than me. And he pretty much gave me my foundation and I played in his bands first. So he was, you know, my first real teacher, even though we were both jumping off into the learning curve together.
was I wouldn't imagine there's a lot of women playing guitar back then.
No.
How did Did you ever get any shit for that? Like, was it ever more? I know it's a rhetorical question. Okay, what shit did you get? And so let's cut to the chase. So what was some of the crap you had to deal with?
Oh, you don't have enough time. But, you know, because I have four brothers, it was all par for the course. I had guys to walk up to my amp and actually put their head in front of the amp to see if there was sound coming out. You know, to which I would, of course, kick the loudest pedal I had and blast their ears. But anyway, you know, the give and take of what guys think or what they thought didn't really dawn on me. It didn't bother me because, like I said, I grew up the eldest of seven with four brothers underneath me. So
wow,
I got teased
God
all
bless
the time.
Your parents.
I got teased all the time. So by the time I got to clubs and stuff, it was like, this is more of what I just went through.
Right.
So, you know, I end up treating guys that I work with like my brothers, and even the ones that have something to say, you're just like that annoying brother. And I never really let it stick to me, you know, even though some of it was pretty weird, some of it was pretty nasty, some of it was pretty whatever. And the more, and I mean, my brothers tease me, you know, you'll never make, you know, you're making noise, you know. And so when you get all of that already, it's kind of like I watch bit of a documentary on the Williams sisters, on Serena and Venus, and how their dad would pay kids in the neighborhood to heckle them while they were playing, so that no matter where they play from now on, no matter what people say, your friends are going to get you harder. And their dad was paying them. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
So my brothers heckled me every day I tried to play and practice. So it happened. It was part of it. Did I get paid the same? No. Did I lose stuff because I was female? Yeah. You know, did all of that happen? Yeah. And does it still happen? Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. But did it stop me? Nah.
So you just did what you had to do and didn't get caught up in the bullshit, basically.
You know, like I said, when the first 18 years of your life is being constantly teased by your brothers. You know, they were just the same voices, just different faces to me.
Right.
So, you know, and the guys that were nice who wanted to teach me something, I gravitated to them. The ones that were negative, you know, from 12 years old, I had a growing spurt, and I was 5'10 at 12. So
wow.
I didn't really care.
Yeah.
After that, I was like, if you bother me, my brothers will beat you up.
Right.
So,
right.
You know. I mean, my brothers can tease me, but they will defend me. So if it gets too weird.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you didn't get angry about that, or at least you didn't get angry and like absorbed in the anger.
Oh, well, I won't say I didn't get angry, but the one thing my father did impart upon me as an Army guy, he says, honey, don't get mad, get even. Be better, do better. And make them stand there with their mouths open.
And you did.
Well, I'd like to think that I obeyed him.
That's great. When you were studying music in school, what were some of the things that you learned that helped your career professionally? And what were some of the things that you wish you learned that would have given you even better skill sets?
Well, I think the foundation... Because I grew up singing first, so my sight reading, as far as my voice, was one thing. I wish I could have had more formal reading of guitar besides, you know, in junior high and high school. And, you know, I tried to implement that program when I went into my student teaching in college to, you know, get a guitar program that was a little bit more than Mary Had a Little Lamb. You know, I wish I had had maybe a foundational teacher. I mean, I was taking piano and I was taking voice, but I wish I'd put my eyes on, you know, more guitar studies earlier. Because when I got to college, of course, you know, he pulls out the Segovia studies and it's like, oh, I could sing them quicker than I could play them. So I can read, but my sight reading for singing is faster than my guitar sight reading. And I'm not afraid to admit that. I mean, I can read, you know, a lot of people will see you in rock and funk and blues situations and think that you can't read, but I do read. I'm just not as speedy as I'd like. So I'm constantly sitting with friends and taking master classes when I'm off and trying to, you know, get better at that and find out their tricks, how they, you know, what they do to speed things up. And, you know, Alan Hind is a great friend that I got his, you know, his master class. And Dean Brown, I take some classes from him. And I just did a tour with Doug Pettibone, who is like the you know, slide guitar, pedal steel guru. You know, so guys like that, Doug Hamlin, who's also a great blues player, you know, who does a lot of writing. You know, so I have friends that I sit with and, you know, a couple of hours conversation with Paul Jackson Jr., who's, you know, I just think he's just the bee's knees with jazz guitar. So cats that do things that I don't necessarily do. I'm just trying to get stronger foundationally. And that's, you know, when I'm not touring, which, you know, makes me kind of plunge into the artist music and kind of forget about everything else. That's what I try to do.
That's a pretty common thing I hear, just so you know, from guitarists, that they wish they had spent a little more time boning up on their sight reading.
If I had a teacher, but there was no teacher available in the high school, junior high school system that I was in at the time. You know, there was a basic person, you know, but there was, you know, and, you know, my family, we were, you know, seven, so there wasn't really money for that, and I didn't get a scholarship for school. I mean, we did fine. I mean, you know, I grew up in suburbia. We had a home, so, you know, I didn't grow up in the hood, and, you know, wasn't, you know, a tale of woe in that way.
Sure.
My dad was, like I said, ex-Army, so, you know, we lived a good life, but having extra money for all that wasn't there. But, you know, you get to college and you speed through. You get there. John Shacklett was – he and Consuelo Moorhead were just foundationally just great. And I was in school actually with some of the Wootons because they lived in that area at that time.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's – I didn't know they were from that area.
Yeah.
That's great. You've played with, like I said, three years worth of Rolling Stone magazine covers. I'm going to throw out some artist names, and for each of these folks, if you could talk about how you got the gig and the nature of the engagement, and maybe a cool or interesting or fun story about working with them, and also if you learned any lessons from them, either playing-wise, performing-wise, or even business-wise. So let's start with Prince.
I met Sheila at NAMM and then at the Mesa, which is the German NAMM show. And I was with my friend Rhonda Smith, who's a bassist, and we were demoing for Godin Guitars. And Sheila saw us do our thing at the Mesa because it was, you know, less busy. And she was like, hey, why don't you girls send me some stuff. I'm going to put an all-girl band together project, blah, blah, blah. So we did a demo when we sent her some stuff, and we're thinking that we're going to be working with Sheila, and she had done some things with Wendy and Lisa and Michelle and DeGacello, and, you know, we were like, hey, you know, she doesn't know us. What does she know us from? I was still living in Montreal then. And a couple of months down the line, we get a call, and Sheila's like, well, Prince wants you to come up to Paisley and audition. And we're like, what? So Rhonda went first because, you know, she's a bassist and he's a guitar player. And, you know, I guess he wanted us one by one, and he needed her more immediately than he needed me. And my audition consisted of him on drums, Rhonda on bass, and me on guitar. Because, you know, the tapes we sent to Sheila. It was all kinds of styles all over the place, blah, blah, blah. Because she wanted to write and wanted to know what styles we played in. I mean, in retrospect, I don't think I would have sent something like that to him.
Right.
But so when I got there, he wanted to just jam all different stuff. Because I guess he wanted to find out, is this live or Memorex? Can you really do what's on this
live
tapes?
Or Memorex?
Yeah.
Going back a bit on that one.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a fun few hours. And the funniest thing he said to me right afterwards, he's like, well, in a couple of weeks, you're probably going to be bored playing with me. And I'm like, I doubt that.
Wow, that's a pretty strong compliment.
Well, I mean, but no, but I mean, but him, like every other artist, when you're inside your own thing,
yeah,
it's something that you are inside, and you maybe think that people will grow tired of playing it. But when I left there, I learned 120 songs, and I never got bored, never got tired, wow, never got any of that. So that was him projecting, because it was great, you know.
Yeah, and you can't really beat yourself up for, if it was, you know, hey, if you knew it was Prince, you might not have gotten the gig because you wouldn't have, whatever you did was right, yeah, you know?
Yeah, well, like they say in golf, it was a good miss.
It was a good miss, yeah, really good miss. And how long did you play with Prince for?
We got there in 96, and I was there until 98, and then I came into L.A. and did some things with Sheila. And then we returned and did a couple of gigs with him, and then that ended up in 2005 for the NAACP performance, where he did a 12-minute medley, and Time was there, and Sheila was there, and he got an award the same night. Oprah Winfrey was there, and Barack Obama was sitting in the front because he had just become a senator. So, it was a good run.
That's great. So you toured with him, and did you play on his albums, or just touring, or?
Yeah, I did both.
Wow, that's phenomenal. What did you get most out of that experience? Like, is there anything particularly you learned?
Oh, there's many things. There's many things, you know. He was, you know, professionalism personified, and, you know, and he was never harder on anybody than he was on himself. So if he expected excellence from you, he would not sleep to get excellence from himself. And, you know, he was relentless with that, you know, almost to a fault. I miss that kind of excellence, and I don't think it will pass this planet again in that form. So for that, you know, there is sadness, but gladness that I got a chance to sit with him, talk with him, work with him, learn from him, laugh, get joked by him, because he was a jokester, and just experience that. So,
you know, he was such a good player technically on the guitar, and, you know, a very emotional guy in his playing, as you know. What do you think that was attributable to? I mean, was it that constant demand of himself that you just said, the excellence of, like, nonstop pushing himself?
I mean, you know, push and curiosity. He never, ever came off as, this is a technique. It all came off as very effortless feel. But he was always listening, always learning, always studying. You know, there was always a tape of James Brown's moves, or, you know, some new thing, or he would ask me, who do you listen to? And I would throw out a few names, and then 2 days later he'd come back, well, I listened to blah, blah, blah. And you do this better than him, so why do you listen to him? And, you know, he would, you know, and so he always had an ear to the ground of, you know, influence and who was doing what and why, and, you know, intellectual conversations about what music does, you know, to the body and to the mind and to uplift. So it never really came off as technical. It came off as just a lust for life and spirituality, sound, what it does, how to uplift, and, you know, how to push yourself beyond. You know, he was never comfortable, so he kind of made sure that anybody wasn't comfortable. And, you know, it always would be, let's try this. You got it? Quick, you know. So he always had that restless creativity. That's what I'll call it, you know.
Yeah, I like that. I think most people that are successful or driven in any profession tend to have a couple of things you mentioned. Number one is that restless creativity. Number two is curiosity. I think that's an undervalued or underlooked trait. Talk about Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, Cyndi was great. I got the gig from Cyndi Lauper via my friend Felicia Collins, who was the guitar player for many years for David Letterman. She was playing with Cyndi, and she got the call to go to David Letterman's band, and Cyndi was auditioning. So I went down and auditioned with a whole bunch of women that was auditioning, because Cyndi's an energy person too. She wanted to replace a woman with a woman. And I learned the songs and did everything that Felicia had primed me to do. And at my audition, sitting next to her was Phoebe Snow.
Wow.
And I played the thing, did the songs. You know, the last song I was doing, it had a wah-wah pedal part. And she says, she looks over and says, "Well, that's good, but can you dance like Felicia?" I said, "Well, I don't know if I'll dance like Felicia, but if I don't have my foot on a wah-wah pedal, I can try to kick a little step or something." And Phoebe laughed, and Cyndi laughed. And I think the laughter point was probably what got me the gig, because I had, you know, I wasn't really nervous or put off or anything like that. You know, Cyndi was pretty easy, and I heard that she was, you know, pretty tough on new band members, and you had to listen to her, and she knew exactly what she wanted. So, I try to step into every situation respecting the creation of the music first, and it started with her. So, you know, I didn't walk in with any preconceived ideas except for, let me give her what she wants to hear. Mm. And
how long were you with Cyndi for? Quite a while, no?
Yeah. It's quite a few years, and then it's off and on, because, you know, tour start, tour stop. You know, it changed personnel, and, you know, then I moved to L.A., and then it was like, we're getting used to New York people, but she and I remain great friends, and I'm one of the many godmothers of her son. And so we're in contact even still.
That's great. Talk about George Clinton and P-Funk.
Well, you know, I got to meet George and his whole crew through Prince, and we all jammed, and then, you know, went to a couple of shows, and whenever he'd find out I was there, I'd go in and, you know, and jam with him on stage. Now, you go in and you think, okay, I'm going to jam and I'm going to leave. And every time I got ready to leave, he'd break it down. "Come on, Cat, play some more of that funk." And then I look up and it's 45 minutes. And I'm like, I'm almost finishing the gig. I'm not getting paid for this, though. But George is just, you know, he's just infectious. And his guitar players, I mean, McKnight and those guys are just so lovely, you know, and I love them. I respect them. I love everything they do. And you know, there's a mutual love fest whenever we get to play, because, you know, ensemble playing with a couple of guitar players, I like that kind of stuff. Some cats don't like it. I like the interplay. It's kind of almost, you know, it's almost like a New Orleans thing. You just kind of get in there and get that funk and find out who's stepping where, and you make it do like that. So, you know, that's always the fun part with George.
Very cool. He's a unique character, I would imagine.
Oh, just beautiful. Beautiful guy. Beautiful guy. Great to be around.
Now, the next two, I was shocked to see them, Big Mama Thornton and Odette. I don't know why, but I guess I was. Tell me about those experiences, because those are some pretty incredible.
Well, I was a house guitar player at a jazz club in Montreal, and they would call us in for artists that would come in without their band. And Big Mama Thornton, and I just gotten out of college, and she was one of the artists that came to the club. And we got a chance to play for her. And she kind of side-eyed me when I first got there, like, "You too young to know anything about the blues. What you know?" You know, and she was pretty tough. She was pretty tough. And, you know, I got through it. She definitely put me on point, you know. She was ailing at that point, but her voice was still strong. She didn't stand during the performance. She sat. But she riveted you. And when she did Hound Dog, man, you know, you knew where it came from. I mean, God bless you, Elvis, but.
Yep, most people don't.
When you heard her do it, you knew exactly where it came from.
What were you doing up in Montreal? Did you go there after school, after college?
Yep, with an original band named Chukon, and we ended up winning Star Search. We won their talent show up there called Rock Wars, and then we won Star Search. And we were all from the States, and we had a Canadian promoter, and I ended up marrying my first husband and living up there for a while. So yeah.
Oh, cool.
And that's where I got to play with Celine Dion and quite a few French Canadian artists that you may or may not know. Rock Voisin, worked with the Montreal Jubilation Gospel Choir, Joanne Blouin, Norman Brathwaite, who was like the French Canadian Arsenio Hall. He had TV shows there. You know, I mean, Montreal, great rock scene. Nanette Workman, Walter Rossi, Jeff Healy, I got the chance to work with him up there. You know, a lot of great people.
You switch into that French accent really quick. And like, well, really authentic.
Well, my second language is French. I mean, in college I had to learn them all, and my vocal coach was not about to just let us sing the opera phonetically. She made us do the grammar, and she's like, how can you sing something and you don't know what you're singing about? How can you give it the dramatic pitch if you have no idea of the story, you have no idea of the words you're saying? So you're going to learn German and Italian and French and a bit of Russian and, of course, Latin. So
makes sense.
I did a lot of vocal and guitar sessions in French and English. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was like instant switch. I to the point where you'd think that was like your original language. You switched so quick, and you do the accent and everything. And I was like, "Whoa, Odetta! What an experience that must have been."
Oh, yes. As a kid, when I started playing guitar, my mother went out and found an album that she thought would resonate with me. It was Odetta, I think, live at Carnegie Hall. She says, I want you to see somebody playing guitar that looks like you.
Ah, that was very
and
clever.
That put it in my mind. And to me, I always went, I could do that because she did it. You know, and that was
yeah.
I did it. Fast forward many years later, I was in Halifax doing a concert with the Montreal Jubilation Gospel Choir, which I sang and recorded with, and we do a version of Oh Mary Don't You Weep, and I play guitar and I scat while I'm singing. So when I'm doing both to make things connect, sometimes I close my eyes, and there were a lot of people on that concert. Sissy Houston was there, the Winans were there, a whole lot of people were there because it was a festival, and we were sound checking in this church. So we're sound checking and I'm running through this thing. And I opened my eyes after that little piece of the song that I did, and standing in front of me with her arms outstretched, and I really am not kidding, is Odetta.
Wow.
I almost fainted.
Did you do like a double take? Like how, like checking yourself?
She was
like
standing in front of me, and the whole choir was like, do you know her? And I'm like, no, but yes. And after that, we just became fast friends, guitar, you know, I mean, she was my guru. She was my guitar mother all through the years in my mind. And we just hung out, and we became friends after that. And she introduced me to Maya Angelou and all these women that were her friends. Whenever I would go to New York, I'd go to her house, and you know, she'd show me different things, and, oh, you know, I miss her lots. I mean, she had passion until the day she passed. I mean, she kept doing shows even, you know, when her legs didn't work, her hands and her voice still worked, and she still did shows, and she still had a passion. And she came when I did Zucchero shows. She came to the shows. I mean, she supported me. I supported her, and she's just fantastic.
So it was a nice relationship that you grew out of that.
Absolutely.
That's nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you go on Facebook and you look through my photos, you'll see a photo of me and her Rhonda Smith, Felicia Collins, Kim Clark, who's an amazing jazz bassist. We were in a club in New York after we had seen her, and she was hanging out having a drink with us. You know, like,
that's so cool.
You know, it's like, you're kidding, you know.
But it's like when you're like, what I've realized, I'm not a guy that gets starstruck. I pretty much know that everybody has the same stuff going on. I mean, you know, everybody has too much to do, not enough time to do it in. No matter how much money you make, you always got to hustle for more.
Absolutely.
Nobody's kids listen to them the way you want them to, you know. And but when you have that contact with these people, I think there's still a part of it that goes, wow, this is pretty weird or pretty impressive or just weird, I guess, right? Or surreal, maybe. I don't know. What's the word?
Those words are close.
Yeah. Mick Jagger.
Well, I was recommended by a great guitar friend of mine to do a session because it was Mick and David. They were working together on the Alfie soundtrack. And I went in there, so it was semi-playing, semi-audition, semi- a lot of different things, and Mick actually played guitar while we were doing the session, and he was actually showing us pieces in it. You know, like I said, we did a lot of recording, we did a lot of talking, we hung out because they were having technical problems. They had to end up going buying a new Mac and renewing the whole system, and it was crazy, but Mick was just lovely. David was just lovely. A lot of great players were on that session, and, you know, Mick was just super cool. Just super cool, you know. He and David were laughing a lot, and Mick plays great guitar.
And you keep saying David. I'm assuming you mean David Bowie?
No. David from the Eurythmics.
Oh, okay. Dave Stewart.
Yeah, Dave Stewart and Mick were doing that session.
Okay.
And that soundtrack session together.
Okay. Yeah. I gotcha now. Do you know Carmen Vandenberg? She played on young lady. She's like 26, I think. She played on Jeff Beck's last album.
No, I don't know her person to person. I've heard of her.
Interestingly enough, she got into playing guitar. This is a really, talk about connecting the dots. She said she got into guitar because she went to school with Dave Stewart's son or something like that, and then they met. That got her into guitar. That was wild.
But anyway, oh yeah.
Buddy Guy, he's got to be, I mean, I've seen him in concert four or five times, and he's just, I mean, it's amazing what he does with the guitar.
Oh, yeah. You know, I had the opportunity to see he and Annie when they were doing this just guitar and voice thing, and they did the Sweet Dreams song with just guitar and voice. Without all the pounding, bop, 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 bop. It's just stripped bare, and it was just mind-blowing. Because then you're listening to the words, and they're pushing where the words change and the scene changes. And, you know, you get the whole idea of how they probably wrote it. And it was just fantastic.
Was
just fantastic.
What's Buddy's secret sauce? Because he's, you know, he's close to 80 now. I don't know when you play with him, but
I got a chance to jam with him, and I met him, you know, many many different times because he'd come to Montreal for jazz festivals. But I hosted a jazz festival in Montreal, and they let me bring in who I wanted, and he came. And it was a few days, and I got to play with John Campbell. I don't know if you know remember who he was.
Do not.
Fantastic. You got to look up the late John Campbell. Amazing guy. Jesse May Hemphill came, and Buddy Guy came. And I asked him, I said, Buddy, I'm doing an acoustic day on Saturday. What do you think about coming in and doing an acoustic set? And he did.
Wow.
And he did covers But he did like a Marvin Gaye, Ain't That Peculiar, on acoustic. It was the swampiest, funkiest, just most, just incredible. And he just, no electrics, just him just digging in and just doing his thing. And he was, you know, when I first met him, I met him at one of his gigs backstage. And before I could talk to him about being a guitar player and being interested, he kind of was kind of, hey, girly. You know, because he's a Mac. You know,
he is.
That's how he stays young. Because you know,
yeah, he is a player.
Buddy is a Mac. You know, and then okay, that's nice. But I'm really a guitar. Oh, and then he was like, okay, did he got all serious?
Hey, well, good for you that you got him on track.
Yeah, no.
Or off track.
No, it was fun. But when he came and did the blues festival that I hosted, and he just did that, it was just so fantastic. And he just a great friend.
Yeah, tremendous player. I mean, he's just so just amazing when he plays. I mean, he's just a tremendous player, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How about Santana?
I get my first meeting, Carlos, was actually at a Prince gig that we did in his town. He came. And he came early. And he actually came back and stood in a prayer line and blessed the band and blessed us before we went on stage and did everything, right? And we had already rehearsed this medley that we were going to do with him, so we knew he was going to play later, but that he would come early, sit with the band, hold hands with everybody, talk to everybody. You know, so we get to the end of the show. Prince calls Santana out. He comes and he does a thing. And Prince and Santana, you know, bing, 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 and back and forth. And, you know, and I'm playing rhythm guitar because I'm there for support. And, you know, Santana gets caught up in the thing. And the arrangement was very, very finite. It was very well arranged, but it was finite. Because, of course, we had a curfew on the hall because, you know, those two guys could have jammed all night. And Santana looks around and says, hey, you should play too. You should come on and play too. And Prince is looking at him like, she's doing her part. But that he was trying to summon me into trading with them, I thought this was just super lovely. You know, I didn't get a chance to do it then. But, you know, whenever he'd come to shows, he'd talk to me. And then he ended up marrying one of my best buddies, Cindy Blackman.
Oh, right.
And we have, you know, and she's my friend for many, many, many years. And we've gotten closer as friends because of that. And I was actually at their wedding and, you know, I've sat with him and his ideas on what he listens to and who inspires him and, you know, how he puts together melodies and, you know, just his hand strength. And, you know, when we talk about stuff and it's not technical, it's just the flow. You know, and I go and I visit them and he's got a guitar and he's like, oh, sit down, let's play something. And I'm like, ooh. Because, you know, and I thank my lucky stars, you know, because my mom is looking down on me. She bought me my first guitar and within a year she died of an aneurysm. And all the cats that I listened to and all the music I listened to as a kid sitting at the radio because, it, you know, when you had a question and asked me, when did I buy my first CD and my first record? I don't remember because we didn't really have, you know, money for that. So some kid in the neighborhood would buy the record and we'd go to their house and they had the record player and we'd all listen to it. You know, my dad had a record player and had tons of albums, but he had that locked away because he had four sons that were mischievous.
Yeah.
So none of that. So we had Walkmans and, you know, Walkmans, we listened to stuff. Yeah. You know, I mean, cassettes, you know.
Yeah,
you
I remember.
Listen to stuff. You listen to stuff and, you know, illegal music sharing. But anyway, I mean, you know, we shared whoever bought the, you know, whoever had the money, we'd pool our money and, you know, buy the hot record of that day and we would all sit and listen to it. So Santana was, you know, he and Hendrix were the first guys that their melodies inspired me to, you know, because I first started out playing acoustic and playing bass. I did whatever the band that needed me to play. I was like, can you play bass? Yes. Can you play acoustic guitar? Yes. When you're a girl, you don't get to play lead. Okay, I don't care. I just want to play. You know? But those guys, because I hear a voice when I hear them play. It's, you know, it's like they're singing while they're playing. It's, you know, it's connective. It's melodic. It may not be technically perfect like some people say, but, you know, there's something in what they play that reaches out to people. And those two guys grab my ears first. You know, I love the Stones. I loved all the British rock. I love Beatles, of course, because they were songsmiths. And they, you know, inspired me to write songs, you know. So everything I could listen to, all the radio was constantly going. My father would come home because he was a jazz guy and say, turn that off. I need to hear Miles Davis right now.
You mentioned something. You said something about Santana's hand strength.
Yeah, I mean, he bends with everything. I mean, everything's even. Everything has that tone, you know. You know, I mean, I don't know if I have a problem with my pinky. You know what I mean? I can't really dig in and get a few things. And, you know, my hand strength is different. And I have to concentrate and focus on it. I know a lot of guys that are like that. But his hands are so strong, you know.
That's interesting.
His handshake is like, So was B.B. King's.
Buddy Guy impresses me like that. He just seems like a very powerful, physically powerful guy.
I mean, B.B. King shook my hand and my hand disappeared.
Oh, really?
big hands.
Let me ask you one more. We could go on this all day. Stevie Wonder.
You know, it's funny. My first meeting Stevie Wonder was in Montreal. And I had just broken up and divorced my husband. And my bandmate said, hey, a promoter of ours, friend of ours, we got tickets to Stevie Wonder's concert. Don't sit in the house moping. Come on, go with us. And then we got backstage. And I met him, and he shook my hand. And the minute he shook my hand, he's like, oh, come on, I think you need a hug. I never met Stevie. Didn't know anything about him. Very nice to meet you. And he hugged me, and I burst into tears. And he's like, whatever you're going through, it's going to be all right.
Wow.
And he said, you say you're a guitar player? And he's touching my fingers. He's like, okay, you don't have fingernails, so you're telling me the truth about that. And then years later, I would meet him again doing the Donnie and Marie daytime show. And he came on the show because he is one of Donnie's favorites.
Hmm.
And I was in the house band for Donnie. And Stevie sat at the piano and started doing stuff. And he and Donnie started singing. And then Donnie gave us the, let's play along with him. So we started to play along with him. And it doesn't stop. And they're supposed to break and cut the commercial. But of course, Stevie can't see that. So Donnie's like, keep it rolling. And Dick Clark is like, no, we got to cut. But we keep playing. And we play through the break. And we play through it all. And after it's all done, I said, Mr., you know, we're backstage and we're talking, and he's a jokester. And he says, I remember your voice, because he came to Paisley Park as well. I'm skipping forward. He came to Paisley Park, and he and Prince, great friends, and I forgot that. And we played in Detroit, so this is prior to the Donny Osmond thing. So I forgot that, I'm sorry. And we played in Detroit. And we went to this restaurant bar, and a band was playing, and we had dinner. And, of course, if there's a band playing, Prince is going to go take over the band. So Prince was on drums. I was on guitar. Tony Rich was on keys. Stevie was on keys. And Larry Graham was on bass.
Mm.
And we jammed.
Wow, what a band.
But during the dinner, Stevie said, I know your voice. We had met before, and he remembered my voice.
Very cool.
And he's like, you that girl that told me you play guitar. And you cry when I hug you. And he remembered that.
Wow.
Which
was pretty touching, just him.
Just him remembering.
Yeah.
And then we get to jam together, and it was hilarious. And then, you know, here we are again. He's like, oh, yeah. And he used to call Prince Skipper. He's like, yeah, you were in Skipper's band. What you doing here with the Osmonds?
Wow.
So, yeah. So, Stevie's great. Great guy. Great player.
What makes him tick as a musician, if you know, in your exposure to him?
I have no idea. I'm sure just, you know, divine. Some people are just divinely touched, and I think it's so effortless with him that I think he was just divinely touched. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid watching him and just feeling like, man, somebody just said, bing, you know, he just seems divinely touched, and there's nothing else I can say. Because anything he hears, anything you sing, anything he can play, anything he can sing, anything, and if his voice still sounds like it sounded 20, 30 years ago. He's just divinely touched, and he's a jokester, and he's fun, and he likes to laugh, and you know, I mean, and you sit down with him after the gig, and he's like, "So what you talk about?" And he just joke with you.
That's cool.
You know,
but yeah. Some of the things he did early on were just so unique. I mean, just incredibly unique and different at the time, you know?
I mean, the record that he played all the instruments on. I mean, who does that not inspire?
Yeah. He's just a brilliantly talented guy. Kat, what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
I've got a few projects that are passion projects of mine. One of them is an annual project I do every year called Black Women Rock, and it's hosted by a poet named Jessica Kerr Moore. She is, to date, the only spoken word artist to win the Apollo Amateur Night of the Apollo. She won that 27-odd years ago. Her poems are featured in the African American Museum at the Smithsonian. She's a badass. She took it upon her because she loves women that step outside of the box. So she did it as she started to write poetry about, you know, women who didn't really fit into the pop mode or the R&B mode or the mode of the good girl. She liked the Tina Turners and Betty Davis, and you know, we did a tribute to Betty Davis music, and she came up with this idea to have all female musicians, and she started calling around, and she called me through somebody else, and every year since, and that was 2004, every year since that I could make it, I've been there for her. This year we are honoring and featuring the fantastically talented Nona Hendrix from the original LaBelle, and her original music and her take on things and her rock and roll spirit is just pushing us forward. You know, a few years we did music from Tina, we did music from Betty Davis, who is still alive, who is still doing stuff. That's the ex-wife of Miles Davis, who, you know, just worked with the guys from Sly and the Family Stone, but they did a rocky kind of funk kind of thing, like Mother's Finest and, you know, bands like that, you know, the early Chaka Khan stuff that was not quite funk, not quite rock, not quite that, but edgy. So she honors, you know, talent that's done that type of thing. Rez came a few years and did her take on The Edge of 17, the, you know, the Fleetwood Mac thing, but, you know, and she's African-American, and we just did crazy stuff with it. You know, Dion Farris came one year and we did great stuff with her. I mean, just women that inside the Afro-punk scene, Tamar Khali, you know, I mean, just that are just, you know, stepping away. And Kimberly Nicole, you know, who just is a fantastic rock and roll ballerina diva. I mean, that don't get radio, that might not get the visibility, but we celebrate them there, and it's just fun to do. Also, in April, I'll be part of the Prince celebration in Paisley Park. They're going to do 3 or 4 days of concerts to commemorate his transition and to, you know, pay homage to his life, and that's going to be a lot of fun. I've missed the ones before because I've been working. And I'm going out in February, then between February and March, to Europe to do some more dates with Zucchero, my Italian boss and friend and brother. And we're having just a whole lot of fun with that.
How'd you get hooked up with Zucchero?
I auditioned. Everything I've gotten, nothing comes to, you know, people think, oh, yeah, you could just flow into that. Like I said, to quote, to paraphrase Miles Davis, you're only as good as your next note. You know, you got to show that you belong in the room, that you belong to be there. Because guitar is so subjective, but yet so accessible that, you know, a lot of people can do a lot of things. So you have to step up to the plate, show that you can do it, give it a little something extra, and honor the music. So Polo Jones, who was actually Larry Graham's a protege during his time with Graham Central Station, he's the bass player for Zuccarello and his band leader, and he's also working with Godin with their guitars, and said, hey, we're looking to add a guitar player. We have one Italian guitar player, but we're looking to add a guitar player and a utility player to the band. We're doing auditions in LA, and I auditioned and got the gig.
Good for you. You really, I just see this over and over again, and you're certainly multiples of that. You're always hustling, man. And you're always like, you know, you have the mentality, like, which is great. You know, I say yes to everything. You know, I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, like, if there's an opportunity, you want to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say yes because of the challenge of it, because it's not in a comfort zone, because it's not in a box. I mean, when I got to LA after working with Prince, I was put in the funk box, you know, but I play rock, I play jazz, a bit of blues. I mean, music has fascinated me my whole life. So, you know, the box, I figure people do because that's what they need to make it easy for them. For me, music is music. And if I dig it, I dig it. You know, and if I can put my hands in it, I'll give it my best shot. I'll give it my best try. When I was in Montreal, I had Senegalese friends, and I'd go and play with them and sit with their guys and watch the Quora players. And, you know, I had Brazilian friends who are still my friends now, and, you know, just do samba gigs where it's just a guy playing a tambourine, me, and a vocalist. And we got to play all night. So I got the funchika, you know, just to make myself do it. Whether I did it great or not, that remains to be seen, but I got better at it because I worked at it, because I was curious about it, because I love the way it sounds, you know, because I, you know, sat down and studied with some guys that say, hey, if you try this, you try that, you can do this, you can do that. You know, nothing's in my comfort zone, really. Everything is out. You know, everything is curious. Everything is, I mean, it's something I got to try, and if I do well at it, fine. If I fail at it, hey, I gave it my best.
Right. But there goes that word again, curiosity. You know, that's the driver, and again, it's so important, I think, in any in anybody who's successful.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Everybody pays tuition in their careers, and I was curious if you'd be kind enough to maybe share one or two mistakes that you might have made along your journey, and what were the lessons that you learned from those mistakes?
Well, if I'm going to stay true to myself, and I really believe, not religiously, but spiritually, that every step is ordered to be either a teaching or a learning moment, then I can't look at it as mistakes. So I look at it as, I needed to learn this lesson, so I did that. And I need to learn this lesson, so I did that. So I'm not going to say that I didn't make mistakes, because we all do. But there's not anything I can point to say, well, that was a big no-no and rah, 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 because it righted itself. And I learned from it. So I can't get down about it and say, oh, if I hadn't done that, then I didn't, because there is no way with the realm of, with just the mathematical realm of possibilities as to how things can change. That if I didn't do this, then I wouldn't have done that, then I would have done this, then I would have done that. But there's a multitude of scenarios. So that's not a question that I can really give you one answer to.
I totally, you know, get it. That's 100% legit.
I mean, would I love more time to practice? Sure. Would I like more time to write music? Yes. You know, would I like less time off on the road? Perhaps. But what I've gained the experience of learning to, you know, navigate in the business, maybe not. You know, would my bills have been paid on time? Maybe not.
Yeah, that's a big one.
with diving into whoever I'm touring with and putting my own creativity aside, would I like to change the balance on that? Maybe yes, maybe no.
Yeah.
But then I come out of it learning something, and then we are what we absorb. You know, no matter how genius anybody is, you are what you have learned, where your foundation lies. Whatever your vocabulary is how you speak. So if diving into somebody else's, diving into Prince's catalog, diving into Cindy's catalog, increases my dialogue and increases my, you know, inner way of seeing how they utilize sounds and tones and chords and harmonies to get across their message, how it changes me as a songwriter, how being a part of their method, you know, makes me broader and bigger and more open to everything. I mean, there's so many young guitar players out here now just doing fantastic stuff, and I'm just open and listening, and, you know, they're posting stuff, and, you know, they're doing stuff that I don't think I do. You know, when I practice, I don't think I would post my practice.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, but there are a lot of folks that do it. And, you know, I mean, that's a bold way of promotion and doing, but that's business. That's the way the business is changing, it's forming, and it's becoming, and it's promotion, and it's you know, it's organic. It's constantly moving. So, you know, to say I would change something would be like toying with a destiny that I don't really have control over. So, no.
No, I totally get it. 100% legit. And I like what you said. I wrote that down, actually. We are what we absorb. That was really cool.
Well, you can close your eyes at the end of the day, but you can't close your ears. So your ears are always listening, absorbing. Like I, you know, as a person who plays a lot of music, I really can't go to sleep with music playing, because at some point my brain will wake up and go, hey, that was...
I need to learn that lick.
That was good right there. Wait.
let me just get out my guitar for 5 minutes. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's crazy.
Are you a good? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Are you a guitar nerd? Like, are you a collector of gear?
Oh, I wish I had the money to say I was a collector, but people who collect have lots of money to do that. But I do enjoy the instruments that I own, and I do try to pick them with care, or they come to me through somebody else with care, or they're, you know, presented to me, and they, hey, check that out, you might like that. So I've been lucky, yeah, I've been lucky.
What's your go-to guitar right now, and maybe what other two would make up your top three?
Well, my PRS 24 fret custom is my go-to. And Paul made that and sent it to me when I was with Cyndi Lauper, and it's been that ever since. I recently got a Duesenberg that I love. It's got the P90s on it. It's just fantastic. It's a different beast altogether. And, you know, my Godin acoustic guitar, which is a Seagull, the big body, that's what I use for, you know, shedding and writing, and just, you know, sit it down and pick it up and it's right there. I was in Helsinki and I ended up in a guitar shop, and
imagine that.
And picked up a couple of Gretches, you know, that I love. The Penguin.
I don't know that one. The Penguin.
Yeah, it's like the white Falcon's little baby brothers, like the white penguin. It's a beautiful guitar. It sounds great. A lot of tone capabilities. And a Chet Atkins that was there that was just saying, hey, pick me. So I picked those two Gretches up, and I hadn't had a Gretsch in a long time. So I'm kind of getting back into the Gretsch kind of mode. You know,
funny that you find like the such a quote American guitar, Chet Atkins Gretsch in Finland.
Yes.
It's funny how
at
that
a
works.
Shop run by an Italian guitar aficionado.
That's wild.
So I was there playing with Zucchero, and I went in and spoke a little Italian to him, and he's like, ah, Hey!
There you go.
So it was great.
Are there any players who influence your playing or who have influenced your playing that people might be surprised to hear?
Everybody influences me. That's not a fair question. Everybody influences me. I mean, when I was learning as a kid, my father would kind of stop me and put on Wes Montgomery. And I was a kid. I didn't know. And I'm like, Daddy, that's two guitar players. That's not fair. Because to me,
yeah,
Wes sounds like two people. He's like, no, honey. When you get better, you will understand it's just one guy. So when I'm doing a refresh, I go to Wes first. Yeah, I think, you know, because my father confounded me with him early, you know, because he didn't really dig rock or anything like that. He was like, oh, you playing with that Prince guy, the guy that sings like a girl, you know. He didn't really care much for him. But he enjoyed the fact that I got a chance to be on the Tonight Show, and I got a chance to meet Magic Johnson and Tiger Woods and all these guys because I was out with Prince. He liked that part.
Yeah.
He didn't much care for him. He liked Cindy, you know, but he was a jazz guy. I mean, another place that I go to do a refresh is a good friend who – I think left this planet too soon. Jeff Lee Johnson. I don't know if you would know him or not.
You know, I'm interviewing Reggie Washington.
Oh, Jeff Lee.
Yeah, I know Jeff Lee.
His album, Blue, whenever I just need to just break from one project to another, I just put that on. I put that on when I work out at the gym. I put that on. He's got this thing, and he's got a song called Move, and that's what I start my workout with, like Move. You know, you just got to... And he's so much humor, and we laughed when I got a chance to meet him. It was Tracy Wormworth that told me about him. She's the bass player for the B-52s, and she told me about him. And I started listening, and I'm like, oh, my God, man, this guy is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and Prince asked me, who are you listening to? And it was around the same time where I started working with him that I discovered Jeff. And I said, this guy named Jeff Lee Johnson. And he never talked about him, but he was like, a few years later, they all got to meet, and he worked with Sonny T and all the, you know, and Jeff played with, and I talked to Shaka, and Jeff played with Shaka, and, you know, through the fire, she told me he played that solo harmonies by himself, together. He worked it out.
Good guitar player.
Monstrous yeah, guitar really player. Nice. And anything by John Scofield. I like John because he bends any and every style to his will. And he just keeps that voice, even if he's playing straight ahead or if he's doing swampy things or, you know, if he's doing, you know, the jazz funk thing. You know, those guys, and you may not hear it, it may not be apparent in what I do, but... But everybody influences me. I mean, you know.
Your dad sounds like he was such a big influence in your life.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when your wife passes away and you're widowed to seven kids. And I was the oldest. Yes.
Oh, you were the oldest. Okay. Okay.
Okay. I was the next soldier in line.
Yeah. Okay. So, no, okay. I get it.
But in the beginning, he didn't like that I kept playing. He wanted me to put that guitar away and fall in line and help him raise my brothers and sisters. And I'm like, this is the last thing my mom gave me. I'm going to play it despite you. And we went through a whole lot of those teenage rebellion moments.
Yeah.
But as long as I kept my grades up, we argued and fought and did the rebellion thing, but I still did what I wanted to do. I was hard-headed.
Well, you did it well, too. So I'm sure, you know, that I'm sure you had his respect for that.
Eventually. I mean, what father wants his teenage daughter out playing in clubs, sneaking out, going to play in clubs while he's working?
Let me tell you, I've got an 18-year-old girl, and believe me, I feel you. I feel your dad on that one, to be honest with you.
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
for
yes.
Sure, 100%.
Yes.
I don't even want her around I don't use the word men, boys, whatever, but yeah. To be in a club, yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, my sisters were on my side. My brothers would tattle.
Hey, how have you, I know you're always stretching, always pushing. How have you changed or grown as a player maybe in the last 5 years or so? What do you feel you've done differently?
You know, that's like looking in the mirror at yourself to say, how the hell have I aged? I'm with myself every day, so I don't know, but I'd like to think that I'm more open. I'd like to think that by just being around different players in different situations, that my curiosity has broadened. I'd like to think that the next set of songs that I'll write will reflect that. But I just have to dive in because I've been playing with Zucchero for 10 years now. And every album, he changes and brings different people in, even though our core rhythm section is the same. One year, he went to Cuba and did a collaboration and did a lot of his hits in Spanish with Cuban singers and musicians. And he brought in a Cuban guitarist who actually taught at the Music Institute in Havana, but he lives in Toronto now, named Elmer Ferrer, and that guy is just beastly. But he also played all the Cuban natural instrument, the tres, and just his technique, just what he does. But he also listened to Holdsworth, and he also plays gospel. So, you know, we got to mess around, and you know, I've had a chance to sit with him, and you know, so and this latest installment, he brought in Doug Pettibone, who's just an amazing pedal steel slide. He is the go-to guy to, you know, he played with them. Oh my God, what's her name? Not Emmylou Harris, but the other country singer that sings and plays. I can't think of her name now. Johnny Cash's wife.
Oh, June Carter Cash?
No, maybe not her, but in that area. I can't think of her name now, but I went to see her. He's played with everybody. He's, you know, Marianne Faithfull. I mean, Google him and you'll see. And, you know, I got the chance, and after it was done, and he says, well, here's some of my original material. I want you to play with me, and I want to work with you. And, you know, so you get that. That good thing, you know, that good thing happening, you know.
Very cool.
You get collaborations, you get, you know, so I like to think that I've expanded because after the tour is done, then we still want to make music together, you know. So if nothing else, I've expanded on friendships and musical sharing, you know.
There's a guy in L.A., I wonder if you know him, he's really good with all these, like the tres and those kind of instruments. You know Michael Rapole, goes by Nomad?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a freaking badass.
He's a good friend, yes.
Yeah, he's a badass. He's great on those instruments. Kat, if I asked you to pick your three Desert Island discs in no particular order, knowing that they could change any time, what would the answer to that question be today?
Well, like I said, Wes Montgomery, that California Dreamin' Bumpin' on Sunset record. I don't know what the title of the album is. Jeff Lee Johnson, Blue. And like I said, anything by John Scofield or Jeff Beck. Yeah. John Scofield, Jeff Beck. The Jeff Beck CD that grabbed me was the one that he did Friends and Lovers is on it.
Yeah, Wired.
Yes.
Yeah, Wired. Tremendous. I mean,
and then when I got to meet him, because my friend Rhonda's playing with him, and I got to talk to him, he came and actually sat in with Zucchero, because I met him even before that, because he did some stuff with Cyndi Lauper. But he came and sat in with Zucchero, and then we chatted afterwards, and, you know, then my friend Rhonda started playing with him, and I got to chat with him and hang out, and just to watch him, just to get that tone. I mean, that guy could play anything. Yep. I mean, I saw him at Madison Square Garden start off his set with, you know, some of the jazz fusion and end it with Nessun Dorma, which is in a Pavarotti, like an opera piece, and the people in New York are hard. They ain't gonna get up and stand up unless you get them. He ended with that. I saw men just, ah! I knew every Italian man, every Italian American man in that audience that night. They almost shed tears because he had the orchestra come up and he played it like Pavarotti sang it, and it just ripped everybody's heart out.
Yeah, it's crazy what he does with an instrument. I mean, it's insane. He's just tremendous.
And he's just better and better and better and better. I strive to be that, you know, just better.
Let's go under the hood a little bit. If you hadn't have become a professional musician, which it doesn't sound like there's a snowball's chance in hell that anything would stop you, what do you think you would have done instead, if you could even answer that question?
Well, like I said, I was good in math and science, and, you know, when my mother passed prematurely, it got me into the human anatomy. So who knows? I got into reflexology, all the alternative things. You know, it helped my grieving, I think, to put my head into what other things could have saved her. What other things are there out there? And I watched my grandmother and my grandparents die of, you know, heart disease and diabetes and all these things. So it kind of put me in the mind of health. So I might have ended up in the health, you know, business, you know, in some kind of way, even if it was, you know, holistic or technical.
Sure.
I like being in the lab. I like that kind of laboratory kind of thing.
Sure. I'm real sorry you lost your mom. Tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or would find a little odd.
I'm a cartoon head.
That is odd. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't mean to laugh like that. Sorry. That was just not expecting.
I will keep the Cartoon Network on all day, all night.
Tell them to bring back Bugs Bunny.
Oh, they are.
Oh, are they?
Boomerang.
I miss Bugs Bunny.
Boomerang, man. Boomerang.
I'll have to check that
out. Boomerang gives you bugs, gives you everybody. I find that it relaxes me. It gives my mind a break from the media noise. It takes me back to happy times. It sometimes inspires me because some of the music these guys write for cartoons is pretty hilarious. I mean, Ren and Stimpy. I don't know if you know that cartoon.
But I do.
Those guys with the guitar.
I do know that cartoon.
I'm like, yes. They just went and they went, and it's just blows me away. So, yes, I am a cartoon head. Yes, I am.
That's a great answer to that. And, yeah, some of those old orchestra from Bugs.
Oh my God.
That was serious stuff.
And the Spielberg Animaniacs.
Yeah, good stuff.
Pinky and the Brain? Come
Pinky
on.
And the Brain, I remember that. I have two sons, 27 and 25, so that was their era.
Come on. Pinky is in my studio. Full size. I rub on his head before I play.
Most important person in your life?
Well, equally, I'd have to say my parents. You know, there's no one person, but I'd have to say them both because they both gave me something special and different, you know.
What's your non-musical superpower?
I don't think I have one. I don't think I have a superpower at all.
No, I think you do, Kat. Hey, you know what? I meant to tell you what you said before. You said it's kind of like trying to look in the mirror and see how you've aged. The reason why that's tough for you is because you look like you're 35. For people like me, it's easy. I could look in there and say, man, I didn't have them wrinkles even 2 years ago. So believe me, that's why you're struggling, Kat. So hats off to you. Best thing that's ever happened to you?
Getting that guitar and having my direction kind of set for me, even though my mother leaving this earth had to happen to galvanize it.
Sure.
You know, but yeah.
That's a great answer. Thank you. biggest business or personal win?
Getting my guitar. I'm back to the same.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, it helped me grieve. It is my confidant. It is my therapist. It puts gas in my car and puts a roof over my head. It makes my little nieces and nephews laugh and want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets me indoors that, unfortunately, in this country, as an African-American woman, I'm sure I wouldn't have gotten into without it. Because I happened to play a music that people tried to put a color or a race on, but I played it like it belonged to me, because music is free. It's in the air. You don't see it.
Very true.
As a color, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though there are people that will try to tell you, well, rock metal belongs to rah-rah-rah, this belongs to rah-rah-rah, and I'm like, stop talking. It's in the air. Air has no color. You breathe it, you need it, it's necessary. End of story.
Good for you, man. You're awesome. Hey, do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music and the Cartoon Network?
Well, trying to stay fit and trying to, you know, do workouts that don't end up boring my body to the place of complacency. And I do play golf.
Oh, cool.
When I can. My basketball career was unfortunately ended with a couple of knee injuries, but I'll shoot around, you know, I like being fit. I like going out, and I did do a bit of skiing, but like I said, knee injuries. I guess at some point.
Well, you said
if I decide to replace this knee, I'll be able to do all that stuff again.
Oh, I don't do that. Yeah, they want me to do that. I'm like better the devil known than the devil unknown, man.
Exactly.
Well, you said you're tall, so you must have been athletic as a kid, I would imagine.
Oh yes, I was made to play things that I did not feel like playing. Everything. That's why I had knee problems.
Yeah, I hear that.
Basketball, volleyball, field hockey, you know, everything. Everything jumping and running, including track and all that stuff. Running the hurdles, all that. Did all that. All of it.
Hey, what's the favorite place you've traveled? You've probably been around the world several times.
That's not a fair question. It depends on the mood I'm in. It depends on where I just was beautiful. The Caymans are fantastic. But, you know, I'd like to think it's the place that I'm going next.
Ah, that's good. That's a good mindset. You sound like you're really set things up, or you try to think in ways that are going to encourage positive thinking, like on a deliberate basis. Is that accurate?
Well, I've come to find out that that's the only thing that works for me.
Well, yeah, stress sucks. Well, you just, I mean, I don't know. I realized like around the time I hit 50 that, man, you know what? A lot of the stress I have is my fault, so let me just change it, you know?
Hey, stress at any age.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my little nieces and nephews, I watch them stressing out. I'm like, you're 12. Why are you stressed? Well, Auntie, I can't. I'm like, please believe me. It's small stuff. Bigger things are coming.
Yeah, right. What's a favorite part of your job and the least favorite?
I mean, I don't look at it as a job. I look at it as my life passion. But any passion comes with a price. So it's not least or more. It's just acceptable, you know. Of course, you know, you want to wake up, sleep in early, play with your dog, not have anything to do. But then you're homeless.
Yeah, it's kind of gets in the way of making money.
And you don't
have
the things you need, and you can't help anybody if you're in a stressed out place. So I'm doing the thing that I love, and I want to keep doing the thing that I love until I pass to the next level. So as long as I can do that, anything that goes along with it is really small stuff.
Gotcha. I'm going to ask you two more questions, and I'll let you go. I really appreciate all your time and sincerity. What is the best advice you've ever been given?
My mother taught me patience. Wait for it sometimes. Take a breath. let your mind catch up with what you're going to say. My father taught me focus. Focus on what you're doing. If you look to the left or the right at somebody's paper or somebody else's progress, you won't be focused on you and you won't give it your best shot for you. So be a little selfish in your focus. And that's it.
That's great advice. And the last question is, how do you feel you've changed most, if you can answer this, in the last 10 years? Personality.
Well, I hope daily. I hope daily. I hope my marriage to my Canadian husband, he was actually African, Canadian, Scottish. His mother and his grandmother was from Scotland. So my grandmother-in-law was Scottish. And she never called me Kathleen or Kat. She called me Kay. And she lived to be the ripe old age of 98, actually, when she passed. And I said, Grandma, how do you get in day in and day out? She says, well, Kay, I do a few things. She talked like that. And she said, I learn something new every day. I read the paper. I stay current. I try to do a kind thing for someone I don't know every day. I just try to do something kind for them. I try to eat my food, chew it as much as possible, 50 to 100 bites. Your body will thank you for that later. And I said, anything else, Grandma? She said, I have a wee nip of sherry at the end of the night after me. So, you know, those are small things, but those are big things that require time and patience. So she gave me great advice. To this day, I think she was probably the best part of my marriage, but that's another conversation.
that's an off-air conversation. Oh, wow. Hey, Kat, I can't thank you enough for your time. You have a great attitude, and I really appreciate it. And I appreciate everything you do into you becoming you and, you know, staying you. So thank you for everything. I want to just tell people where they could find you online and remind them again what you have coming up. So you're part of the She Rocks community and the house band there, and this will be coming out afterwards, but you can still check out Kat and She Rocks online. And
the name of our band is Rock Sugar, and that's spelled with sugar, G-A-H at the end instead of E-R. Rock Sugar.
How did I know that? How did I know that? S-U-G-A-H. Rock Sugar. All right. Kat is part of the Black Women Rock Festival. In March, it will be in Detroit. And in May, it will be on the West Coast. She's also been a part of Zucchero's band for 10 years, and she'll be touring with Zucchero from mid-February to mid-March. And I think that's, correct me if I'm wrong, Kat, Z-U-C-C-H-A-R-O?
E-R-O.
I apologize. Zucchero. Z-U-C-C-H-E-R-O.
Yes.
She will be taking part of the Prince Celebration in Minneapolis at Paisley Park, and that's April 19th to the 22nd.
I believe, yes.
We're close around those days. Check it out. And you can find her online at her website, katdyson.com. It's KATDYSON.com. And on Facebook, what you got to do is look up Kat with all capitals, KAT, all capitalized, Dyson. And on Instagram, check out your pencils, ladies and gentlemen. It's Kitty Kat. I can't even say this. Kitty Kat Deasy. K, just like it sounds. No, I'll spell it for you. K-I.
Blame my young friends who talked me into doing this, because Kat Dyson is already taken by millions of women in England.
It's Kitty Kat, K-I-T-T-Y, K-A-T. Deasy, D-E-E-Z-Y. So on Instagram, she's Kitty Kat Deasy. Facebook, she's Kat Dyson with capital K, capital A, capital T. And that's it. Check her out at katdyson.com. The Prince Celebration in Minneapolis, April 19th, or mid-April 19th, 22nd. And Black Women Rock, March, Detroit, and May in the West Coast. And Zucchero. She's touring with him, and she's been with him for 10 years. Kat, any final words?
Keep positive, stay funky.
Stay funky. I love it. Hey, everybody. Thank you. And Kat, I really can't thank you enough for your time. You've been real sweet, and I appreciate you sharing your piece of yourself and your stories. It really
absolutely
means
a pleasure, and thank you for the call.
You're welcome. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Again, thanks so much to Kat Dyson. Check her out. Send her money. Buy her stuff. And thanks for spending time with us, Kat. I really appreciate it. And everybody, go to Everyone Loves Guitar. Sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with some cool new stuff we're going to be doing for guitar players. Be nice, go play a guitar, and most important, have some fun. Till next time, peace and love. I am out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.